Well, thank everyone for joining. Some familiar faces, some new faces. I'm looking forward to continuing the relationships and getting to know you guys going forward. And a half hour now together to explore something that's sort of on the edge of our consciousness, I think, a lot. If you're in yeshiva and you spend a fair amount of time learning Gemara, so there's sort of this in the back of our mind, there are those Gemaras we just sort of slide over. Oh, it's Agarata, we'll just, whatever, all of a sudden we're on the next block. Often because we're not really sure what to do with it. What to make of it? What is it? Where did it come from? How should we learn it? Why should we learn it? So I'd like to spend the next half hour exploring those three questions together. What is it? What? The why? And the how? And to at least get a bit of perspective into the what, the why, and the how of Agarata by learning together using a very fascinating essay. I like to dip into different parts of an essay written by the Ramchal. Ramchal is most famous to us as the author of Masil Sisharim, the most published Musar Sefer probably in modern history, published 150 times since the 1700s. But he wrote many, many other Svarim. Some know him from the Derech Hashem, some know him from Das Tfunos, some know him from his poetry and his plays and his writings on good rhetoric. Lashon Limudim. But he is such an expansive Talmud Chacham. There's a little essay, just a couple pages, as you see the entire essay is in front of you, Mamar al Ha'agados. His essay on studying Agadata. He was a man who, for whom Agada was very close to his heart. And we'll see that actually that his Sefer Masil Sisharim is going to fit within the framework that he's going to present us. A fascinatingly broad Talmud Chacham and an incredibly organized, methodical Talmud Chacham. He wrote this little essay, which you can find in some collections of Kisei Ramchal. You can find this essay published at the beginning of the new print of Medrash Rabbah, and you can find it on the Da'at website online. Mamar al Ha'agadas, his essay on Agadata, and his penchant for organization, almost a Rambam-like type of organization, it jumps out at you right away. We're gonna skip around, but we start from the beginning. Ha'ma'amarim b'ha'gadosi chalkos shneimim. When you look at Agadata, so many of them are hard to make sense of, and what are they, and why are they, and how do you attack them? He says, you have to know, number one, we can divide them into two categories. Ha'echad klal ha'ma'amarim ha'limudim, v'ha'sheini ha'be'urim. Some are meant to teach you specific topics, and others are meant to explain. What does that mean? They explain. Ha'limudim, the ones that are for limud, there are agaritas, the limud agaritas are meant to teach you core principles either of Musar or of Kabbalah. Or we would say more generally, Machshava. So you have those agaritas that teach you Musar and Machshava on the one hand. On the other hand, you have the Be'urim, the ones that are explaining, they're there to explain psukim. Sometimes the idea, the goal of the Agadata, let's think about the objective. Sometimes the objective of Agadata is to explain certain principles, to work on certain basic ideas in Musar, certain basic ideas in Machshava, in Jewish thought, or practical ideas about growth. And sometimes it's all about explaining the Tanakh. And the truth is that that framework, he doesn't mention it, but I think it's rooted in a phrase that Gemara has in several places, particularly Yuma Dav Hei Amid Beis. The Gemara wonders, Ketzad Hilbishan, when Moshe Rabbeinu was dressing the Kohanim, so in what order did he put on the Big Day Kahuna? The first time that they put on Big Day Kahuna. The Gemara says, Ketzad Hilbishan, who really cares? Maida Hava Hava, whatever happened, happened. It's not happening again. He did it once. So why does it matter? So first the Gemara says, well, maybe there's relevance halach l'maisa for the future. Maybe la'asad lavo, maybe la'achat chiyas ha'mesim, or in the days of Bayis HaShlishi, it's going to come up again. And then the Gemara says, we're not so sure there's relevance to the future, but le'misbar kroy, misbar kroy, mem yud samach beiz resh, misbar kroy, to explain the psukim. In other words, the Gemara is wondering, why is this a part of Torah? It's a part of Torah, this question, is a part of Torah if it's part of halacha. if it has relevance now or in the future. Or apparently, so the halacha could be, as you take a look at the Rambam's Mishnah Torah, halacha broadly could be practically what you do, or it could be the realm of ideas, understanding why we do what we do. So halacha, machshava, musar, so that's one way out of the question, might have what was. No, this is a part of Torah. This is a part of halacha. But if it just happened once in human history, why would we want to know halachos of the mon? That's no longer part of halacha. That was a one-time dispensation. So the Gemara's answer is, well, there's another part of, when we think about what's Torah, Torah is halacha, machshava, musar, and Torah is also misbar kroy. Even if it no longer has any relevance, but to make sense of the psukim, in that case, making sense of the psukim that describe Moshe inducting Aaron and his sons into Big Day Kahuna, that's an inherent part of Torah independently. So it's not going to be part of Torah because of the content, or it can be part of the Torah because we're trying to explicate the Tanakh. So the Ramchal is using that sort of pair of ideas, that pair of categories that appears in Yuma Daf Hei Beis. He's saying we can look at all of the Agadotas that way as well. Some are about teaching certain principles of principles of Machshava, principles of Musar, and others are Misbar Kroy, Limudim, and Beurim. So he says, so how many, I just gave you two categories, he says, which are really three, because there's Limud of Musar, there's Limud of Chachma Elokis, Machshava / Kabbalah, and there's Beurim, explain the Psukim. So of those three categories, how much do I have to explain to you? He says, Hinei ha-ma'amarim ha-limudim ha-musarim, those agaritas which fit into the first category, or 1A, the limudim which are about Musar, ain't sorich l'dabar aleim alta. I don't need to spend more time in this essay talking about those. To'alta meforsemes yifasam galuya. You understand why they're there. If the Gemara has at the very one of the first divrei Musar and Shas, beginning of Masechet Brachos, the Gemara said, Lameid l'shon chalomer eni yodea. It's a good idea. Train yourself to say, I don't know. Get comfortable saying, I don't know. If you always feel like you need to have the answer to every question, sooner or later, Shemet is bad v'seyaches. Sooner or later, if you always feel like you're the guy who has all the answers, sooner or later, you're going to be making stuff up. So the Reb Zeira says, at the beginning of Brachos, get comfortable saying, I don't know. And Rav Shechter certainly is a model of that Agada. Right? He knows a lot more than all of us, and he says, I don't know, more than anyone else they know. He's entirely comfortable saying, I don't know. So that's a Dvar Musar. So that's sort of his first category. And Rav Chal says, you understand the point. It may be easier said than done, but you understand the point of that type of agadata. I would say, even in terms of those agados, those that teach Musar, there is often a lot of nuance. As a matter of fact, for those who are in my shir presently, BMK Tafshin Pei Aleph, we've been learning Mesilas Yesharim every morning, and the line that we're up to, Mitzvah tomorrow, is actually an example of this. At the end of the second parak of Mesilas Yesharim, the same Ramchal points out an agada, I believe it's in the first parak of Mo'ekatan, a Musar agada, Bat Cheshba Nefesh. At the same time, he says, if you look at it with a delicate, sensitive eye, the way you would look at a Lamdisha Gemara, there's a lot, there are many more layers, a lot more nuance, a lot of sophistication. See, certainly the first category, the limudim, that teach Musar, there's a lot of sophistication. It requires a lot of insight, which is the main thrust of the Hakdama of Mesilas Yesharim. But at least you understand its purpose. You see the purpose. Okay, I get why it's there. But I don't get, Ramchal says, so many other agados, why are they there? All these fantastic sounding stories, what are they all about? So he says, let's talk about the other type of limudim. He says, and to appreciate the more fantastic seeming agados, those that are, it's not so obvious what their objective is, he says, let's take a step back for a moment. Everyone here knows, maybe you didn't know that's a Gemara in Temura at the beginning of the second parak in Daf Yudalad. But you all knew that once upon a time, for the first at least 1,500 years of the Jewish history, so there was Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebapeh, and Torah Shebichsav, it still is, and Torah Shebichsav, up until the days of Yehuda Anasi, Torah Shebichsav was transmitted mitoch haksav, the Tanakh was taught ideally from Klaf, and Torah Shebaal Peh was transmitted Baal Peh. Maybe you had your own notes you took in Shir, but when you taught, when you absorbed it, you memorized the Torah Shebaal Peh, the interpretation of the Psukim and the Dinim, and you would transmit that orally. And that's the ideal way to transmit Torah. Torah Shebichsav, Mitoch HaKsav, Torah Shebaal Peh, Baal Peh. And then came along with Yehuda Nasi around a century and a half after the Churban Bayis Sheni, he decides we're going to begin to commit Torah Shebaal Peh to writing. He commits Mishnayos to writing, and then later on Gemara and so forth. And the Gemara says, in Temura, well, what's this all about? The Gemara explains, ideally, the way to transmit it is Torah Shebaal Peh, Mitoch HaKsav, Torah Shebaal Peh, Baal Peh. However, Yehuda Nasi realized that there was a real danger that content would be lost. That if we don't start committing Torah Shebichsav to Torah Shebaal Peh to writing, we may lose material legamre, and that will be even worse than the alternative. The alternative was we're going to hold on to all the Torah, we're going to transmit it in a suboptimal way. Instead of transmitting Torah Shebaal Peh Baal Peh, it'll have to be Bichsav. As he says here, he says, now they realize that this, he says, they realize that they're going to have to transmit the Torah Shebaal Peh, at least somewhat Bichsav. As much as possible, they kept it Baal Peh, but it's got to be at least, there has to be at least, you know, Mishnais is sort of like notes, highlights, an outline. But then he says, he's picking up in the second paragraph over here, Hineh Hizbonu Od V'Rol. Chazal thought about it, they realized, you know, this concern, Chashasha hazos shechashu achelik ha-mitzvos, roi ha-elochush gamkein achelik sisri ha-torah, v'ikari elokus. If we're worried that halachic details will be forgotten if we don't commit them to writing, there's at least equal chashash, if not more chashash, that machshava, particularly Kabbalistic machshava, will be lost over time if we don't write it down. But the solution isn't necessarily the right solution. We can take halacha and write some of it down and call that Mishnayos. But to take Kabbalah and write it down, not such a good idea. There's no danger in writing halacha down in a fashion that anyone could pick up the sefer and learn it. The chelak hasodos, the secrets of Torah, the mystical part of Torah, it's not a good idea to just write down Kabbalah and let it be out there, published on the shelf. Anyone who wants can pick it up and take a look. Why? He says for two reasons. Lo mitzad yikara muskalos, lo mitzad amkam. Both because of the preciousness of the ideas and because of their depth. What does that mean? So he says the ideas of Kabbalah are particularly precious and particularly profound. Precious, in mitzad yikaram, ki ein kavodo shal habori yisbarach, it will be disrespectful to Ribbono Shel Olam. She master sisarav, that his secrets are handed over to everyone. But what he says, specifically fascinating what he says, people who are anshei midos rovs, they might be chakamim mechukamim. They may be very smart. They may be very intellectual. They may be very intelligent. But they're not people of refinement. They're not humble people. They're not people of refined midos. It's disrespectful to Ribbono Shel Olam that his secret knowledge should be available to people who are grubba people, people who are not of refined midos. And in addition to disrespect, mitzad avkam, there's not only the preciousness of the ideas, but the profundity of the ideas. Very, very subtle, profound, deep ideas. You really have to be very well equipped to really understand these ideas thoroughly. Because you're going to put it out there, people are going to make a hash out of it. And it's going to be misunderstood and misrepresented. So he says, the solution that you and us had for halacha is not going to work for Kabbalah. We can't just write it and put it out there. It's a disrespect to Ribbono Shel Olam. The ideas will be totally distorted. What are we going to do? So Gamru Levtzoas at the bottom of page one, they decided, Lichtov Osa, we're going to have to write them down. We have to preserve them, but we're going to encrypt them. We'll encrypt them. V'drachim ne'alanu minechidos. Shalayuchal amod aleim amishim masul amafechot. We'll put some content down. We'll write down the content, but it's going to be an encrypted form. It'll be an encoded format. And you need to have the key in order to unlock it. So there's a lot of material in Haggadah, but the way to unlock it, the key, that remains Baal Peh. And that a Rebbe will pass on to a Talmud who's ready. Mishlo Nimsru Alom HaFechus at page 2, Yilafanav Kedivra Sefer HaChasim Ki'ilu Nechtvu Kal. So he said that was Chazal's solution, sort of like public key encryption. Those are interesting, that sort of thing. A lot of the material is out there, but if you don't know how to break the code, it doesn't mean anything to you. So he says, when you come across passages in Chazal that seem like, you're not really sure what they're saying, well, what does this mean? Like, they're talking about birds, they're talking about medication, the whole thing is like fantastic, it sounds like a fairy tale. Well, what's this all about? It sounds fantastic, or this sounds sort of like silly. He says, yeah, you're getting half the story. You're looking at the encrypted version, but you need to know how to unlock it. And he goes on to say, over the next section of the essay, that he begins to talk about the ways in which Chazal encrypted and the ways in which you can appreciate how you might unencrypt. And before I go on to that, you might say at this point, okay, so now I'm no longer so excited because I'm not going to understand Kabbalah anyways. The Rav Schechter will often counterpoint this to the way Rizal Salanter presented this idea. Rizal Salanter, the founder of the Muslim movement, so his approach was, yes, that many of the fantastic sounding agadas of Chazal are encrypted material, but Rizal Salanter was of the opinion they're not necessarily Kabbalah. They may be ideas of Musar, but Chazal were speaking in their language. It may not even have always meant to be encrypted, it's just that we're at a distance. Let me explain. The Shechter quotes from Rizal Salanter, they gave the following mashal. They said, Rizal Salanter spent a chunk of his life, particularly when he was younger, in France, doing Kirva with the young Jewish intelligentsia in France. And while he was there, the French went to war, and that was back in the days when you start a war formally, you didn't just go to war, you had to sign a declaration of war. And the very first day of the war, the French took thousands of casualties. The first day was a terrible rout for the French. So the headlines, the next time the paper came out, the headlines ran, thousands of soldiers drown in a drop of ink. Meaning that one drop of ink that the King of France had used to sign the declaration of war, it killed thousands of soldiers. So anyone who was alive at the time, and you saw that headline, you understood what it meant. It wasn't meant to be a deep Kabbalistic secret. It was a clever way of saying, a poetic way of saying, that the declaration of war was terribly lethal to thousands of French soldiers. But if 100 years later you uncover some newspaper clipping in the library, and you have no context, and you find this clipping that says, thousands of soldiers drown in a drop of ink. You say, oh, this must be some sort of fairy tale. That's absurd. How do thousands of soldiers drown in a drop of ink? But again, if you have context, you appreciate what they were driving at. And that, in fact, is the first. Moving on to the next segment of the Mamar, in terms of the Darche HaHesed, the different ways which Chazal would encase their ideas, whether they were ideas of Kabbalah or ideas of Musar, the first is Hash'ala U'mashal. Because Chazal used expressions. They wrote with sophistication. So maybe some of you have already picked up an appreciation for poetry in English class, and maybe some of you have not yet picked up appreciation for poetry. And Chazal didn't just write in flat prose. You give a drasha, I don't mean like a drasha sapsukim. I mean you get up and you give a drasha. So you speak with the artistry. You use expressions. Again, thousands of soldiers drowned in a drop of ink. Either Chazal were intentionally trying to mask what they were saying, and you need to work to figure out what it is that they're saying, or they were just speaking with beauty, but we may need to unpack what they're saying to understand it. And again, let me give a simple prosaic example. If I say, if I tell you something in confidence, there's some information that's a secret not meant to be shared with others, and I say, Avi, don't spill the beans. Okay? And then I say a week later, hey, Avi, you spilled the beans? Say, no, I didn't spill the beans. Now, I have no interest in knowing whether you spilled chalent on the floor of your dining room on Shabbos afternoon. And lo malv lo morid. Obviously, what I mean is, did you disclose the confidential information? It's an expression, don't spill the beans. I don't care. So if in fact you did share the information, but you say, oh, I didn't spill the beans. Why? Because I didn't spill any beans on the floor. That's ridiculous. That's not what it means. That's not pshuto. The pshuto shel mikra is not literally, did you pour beans on the floor? It's, did you disclose confidential information? You have to appreciate language. He says that that's the first thing to realize. Again, like the thousands of soldiers drowning in a drop of ink. It didn't mean that there was this enormous drop of ink the size of a swimming pool and a bunch of soldiers stuck their heads in until they died. He meant that the signature of the king caused those terrible losses. And sometimes it could be more, sometimes it could even be more expansive than that. But let me give you another simple example. If I say the time of Matan Torah, Kadosh Baruch Hu held a gun to our heads and forced us to mekabel the Torah. If I said that, you wouldn't think I mean that there was some, this like 100 meter howitzer that was floating in the air that Kadosh Baruch Hu was pointing to the Jewish people. It's not literal. I mean, Kadosh Baruch Hu could have done that. Kadosh Baruch Hu was called Yachal. He could do any nace he wants. But you would understand. I don't mean like literally, like Kadosh Baruch Hu was holding, there was a gun suspended in the air. It's an expression. It means he forced them. So in fact, the Maharal understands. Maharal lived around a century, century and a half before the Ramchal. Maharal understands when the Gemara says Kafa Aleim Har Kegigas on Shabbos, that Kadosh Baruch Hu held the mountain over their heads. That too is an expression, just like holding a gun to their heads. The mountains, I guess, were the barrels were the guns of 3,000 years ago. Before guns, that's what you did. And the Gemara says, yeah, Kadosh Baruch Hu held the mountain over their head like a barrel. It doesn't mean literally. It could have meant literally. The Gemara says, no, it doesn't mean that Kadosh Baruch Hu did a nace and mountain was literally suspended over the head. That's an expression. It means that Kadosh Baruch Hu made it so clear to them. For a moment, all the lack of clarity that's by design built into Olam Hazeh. All the lack of clarity that by design, that doesn't allow us to just see things as they are, that creates nisyonos. For a moment, Maharal says, Kadosh Baruch Hu peeled it all away. For one moment, it was so the nature of reality, the truth of reality was so obvious. Of course, they wouldn't accept the Torah. It would be absurd not to. But not that literally there was a mountain over their heads. It's actually something much more profound than a mountain over their heads, external force. It was something much more internal and deep. But again, that's an expression. And so many Agadas are like that, whether they're teaching Musar or the teaching Machshava, even sliding into Kabbalah. And then he says three other things you should be aware of. Again, the most common type of method that Chazal used to cloak their ideas, to mask their ideas, is using expressions. And again, as we're saying, something just a single one-line expression. Kafalein ha'kegigas, thousands of soldiers drown on a drop of ink. And sometimes it's more elaborate. Sometimes it could be a whole story that's meant metaphorically. And for a beautiful example of this, and a very usable example for all of you, a sefer that if you're a curious adolescent Ben Torah in the making, you might enjoy. There's an English sefer penned decades ago by the man who's now the Rosh Hashiva in Eretz Yisrael, Aaron Feldman. When he was still a Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael, he published an English sefer, The Juggler and the King, which is an English elaboration of a small kuntres by the Vilna Gaon. The Lagon in this Kuntras attacks two areas of Agada. A series of Agadas begin Maseches Bechoros that have these debates between Chachmei Yisrael and the philosophers of Athens. There's a whole series of debates in riddle, and that's in Begimah Bechoros. And then there's, in the fifth parak of Maseches Bava Basra, the Gemara is a long series, several blots, of all these. Rabba Rabba Chana keeps saying, the Nachosa Yama, the sailors told me, like, one fantastic sea story after another. Oh, they told me about this. They once at sea, and there's this giant creature, and the tail slaps the water, it creates a tsunami. One story is more fantastic than the next. So what do you make of all of it? So the Vilna Gaon has a little kuntras where he works through both sets of agadas, line by line, explaining, based on other sources in the Gemara, based on other sources in Tanakh, if you have the dictionary, so to speak, for how to understand, how to decode what a tail is, what wax is, so you can decode, then you realize these fantastic stories are, as Ramchal is saying, a cleverly cloaked way of teaching all sorts of basic ideas about Machshava. Basic ideas about Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara, Alma Hazen, a lot of very fascinating and practical and profound ideas of Machshava. And it happens to be that Sefer is a very, very accessible Sefer. Try it, you'll enjoy it. The Juggler and the King. It's very, it's easy reading and very inviting and a tremendous amount of fascinating content. So he says that's the most basic method that Chazal used for cloaking ideas. And you have to realize, look at Agalata, there's much more than meets the eye, because it may be what sounds very simple, maybe an expression or a metaphor for larger ideas. Number two, he says, Derech Helem, he says very often, Chazal will, in Agados in particular, though this happens in Halachic Gemaras, also leave out some of the details, leave out some of the conditions. We call that an Ukimta. When the Gemara takes a general sounding statement from the Tanaim, a Mishnah and Brice says, well, really, it's only talking about one particular case. Hachem, I eskenon. The Mishnah says that's mutter. It's mutter if X, Y, Z. The Mishnah says it's usher if A, B, C. That we call an Ukimta. So he says, just like there are Ukimtas in Halacha, there are Ukimtas in Agada as well. So there may be a statement in Agada or a statement in Mutter. As the Rambam writes in his introduction, to Perek Chelek, the Pirush Mishnah is one of his major Agadic introductions. He has a long discussion there about Agada, and he says the same brilliant, profound, sophisticated Chazal, who holy Chazal, who gave us the halachic sugyas that we harve over to work out how to understand them, the same holy, brilliant, sophisticated Chazal also gave us the Agada. So we should assume there's a lot of sophistication there too. And the same, you're going to make a hachamai skin over here, you make a hachamai skin over there. Why do you assume that Agada is so simplistic? Yeah, you got to put the pieces together from different places in Shas, or work out the sugya in Machshava, the same work of the sugya in Halacha. So that's element number two. That often you're going to, as with the Halacha sugyas, there can be puzzle pieces, and just looking at one sugya in a vacuum, you're not going to really appreciate what's going on. You got to put it together. What any Tosfos does, I have a Gemara in Ksubas, I have a Gemara in Psalchem, how do they fit together? Oh, this talk like this, that talk like that. You've got to put all the pieces of the puzzle together to appreciate what's going on in Agada as in Halacha. And then he says, point three, he says, very often Chazal will cloak, this is sort of going back to point number two, to point number one, the Mishalim. Is very often Chazal will make it seem like a kalos. They'll take deep ideas and cloak them something that sounds almost like a dvar shamabakach, insignificant, negligible. He points as an example to a series of agadas in Shabbos of Kufn and Beis, the very end of Masech Shabbos. They talk about old age. They go into a series of like common proverbs about old age. Here you see in section Gimel, Yankusa Kalila Devardi. Oh, being young, it's like a crown of roses. Oh, sabusa, being old, klila dechilfa, that's a crown of thorns. Adela avidna bachishna, I'm bachish, I'm searching for that which I didn't lose. Which Rashi explains, an older person might be bent over. He looks like he's searching for something. He hasn't lost anything. He just He always looks like he's searching for something because he's bent over. So those sound like sort of throwaway phrases, cute, you know, common wisdom, folk wisdom. And Chazal are commandeering what sound like simple folk wisdom to convey very, very deep ideas. Don't be fooled by the presentation. And finally, he goes on to talk about Mismar Kroy. He goes on to talk about taking Agada seriously. He goes on to talk about Mishra Torah and Reshus Ben. But I think our time is almost up. And what I really want to focus on is what we have been focusing on, which is appreciating the subtlety of the way Chazal write their Agados. And I want to close with the final point in this section. And he says, again, Ramchal was focused more on conveying Kabbalah / Machshava, or Shaul Salanter broadened it to also a discussion of Musar. It may be, you may need to put other pieces together to appreciate it. Certainly, often Chazal speak in code, or at least in metaphor and poetic language. And he says, you got to realize the following. Closing point. He says, if you're given a mashal for something, you could use all sorts of things. Right? A gun to the head, beans, her teeth are white pearls. Clearly, is, you don't mean literally, that she has spheres inside her mouth. That's a metaphor. But he says, you could use any material for a metaphor, but Chazal had a particular affinity for science. Chazal had a lot of respect for science. And they had a particular interest in using science as a mashal for ideas of machshava. So maybe you're talking about astronomical data or medical data, and that often may be really, they're not really interested in teaching you. Sometimes Chazal talk about astronomy to teach you the astronomy. And in Masechus Rosh Hashanah, you're talking the Sukkot of Kiddush HaChodesh, obviously it's important to know about the revolution of the moon and so on and so forth. It says, but often you have agados that discuss science. Chazal had a soft spot for science, and they had respect, I should say, for science. So they liked using science as a mashal. Says, you have to realize, if they're using science as a mashal to convey a hashkafic idea, they don't really care about whether the science is true or not. It's irrelevant. What they are saying is true, because what they are saying is the hashkafic meaning, the hashkafic nimshal. Again, going back to the example we gave before, I know it's meta to use a mashal for mashalim. If I say I didn't spill the beans, it might. If I kept your confidence and I didn't divulge the secret information, it is true that I didn't spill the beans, even though I was clumsy last Shabbos and I did make a mess of my challenge over the floor. But that's irrelevant. We don't really care about the challenge. The beans are just a way of talking about discretion. So when Chazal used science as a mashal for a hashkafic idea, whether the mashal is itself is true or whether the science is accurate or not is irrelevant. If Rav Nachman Mibreslov, to give another example, gives the mashal of a king and his son and the queen, right? That's just a way of conveying things about the Ribbono Shel Olam. If there never was a king who had a son, it doesn't matter. Because he's not actually telling you what he's telling you is real, but the mashal isn't real. The truth is that the nimshal is real. As Ramchal goes on to say, if Chazal lived in a different era, they would have used the science of that era. They didn't really care whether the science was true or not. That was just a way of conveying whatever ideas the science was served as a mashal for. We live in different times, use that science. They spoke in terms that their audience would appreciate as a way of conveying the underlying ideas of Kabbalah, of Machshava, of Musar. That was really their content, that was really their goal, and those ideas are indeed true. But again, to appreciate, we emerge from a taste of this, of the Ramchal's Ma'amar HaGadot, with an appreciation for the profundity of Chazal in general, with appreciation for the profundity of Agadot in particular, and hopefully with an interest in seeking to dig more the next time we come across Agadot, try to figure out, see if I can figure out, you know, what Chazal are telling me and what the ideas are that they're trying to convey. I've also thank you so much. I'm glad to hang around for questions. And you know the drill. Night Seder continues across the hall.